Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 296 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, embracing the suck. What? Yeah, it's going to be a terrific show. Just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie doke. Now look, this is your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because honey, you are going to love this. All right, without further ado, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So, of course, you all know that I'm a senior Olympic triathlete. I get out there and my motto is, honey, dial up the pain. Let's do it. All right, where's that surf in the water? How are we doing on the bike going up that hill that goes straight up to heaven? And oh my God, we got a long run ahead of us. Yeah, love it all. Well, then now you understand why I'm totally into this brand new book that has just come out. The title alone says it all. Embrace the Suck. Yeah, you heard me right. Embrace the Suck. Oh my God, it's the Navy SEAL way to an extraordinary life. Yeah. Who else could have written this damn book but a Navy SEAL like Brent Gleason? He's a Navy SEAL combat veteran with multiple tours to Iraq and Africa and other theaters of war. Upon leaving SEAL Team 5, Brent turned his discipline, yeah, understatement, and battlefield lessons to the world of business and has become an accomplished entrepreneur, best-selling author, and acclaimed speaker on topics ranging from leadership and building high-performance teams to culture and organizational transformation. What does this mean? This means he's got street creds. That's why I got you on, Brent. Brent, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you today. I'm excited.
All right. Now, listen, I mean, seriously, I'm going to sell so many of these books for you because I'm just a total believer. Love it. I love the ethic. There's a piece, I think you see it a lot in sports, which is why I'm totally aligned. You know, we're just used to it. We get out there just like a Navy SEAL in training. We got to do our gig. Nothing like your training. Oh, dear God. But still, it's this whole thing about really getting your mind and body totally engaged in the entire experience. And, you know, pain's a piece of the game. You know, it just is. It's not like we're kind of, you know, looking forward to it necessarily. Maybe you are, but,
you know, it's a different. Yeah, you are.
Okay, dude, I'm totally looking forward to it. So, well, you know, I love in the introduction, first of all, the foreword was done by someone I have absolutely read before, and that is David Goggins, who is, which SEAL team was he?
He was with me at SEAL Team 5, and we went through training together, a whole week together, and then we both went to SEAL Team 5 together.
Okay, I just want to make sure I got all that right. And he wrote, you know, a blasting foreword as only another, you know, veteran SEAL could have done. You know, when you start the book, you start out with a Bruce Lee quote that I just love. Do not pray for an easy life. Pray for the strength to endure a difficult one. Okay, why'd you write this book?
Amen.
What's the gig?
Doesn't that get your blood boiling?
Yeah, man. Well, no, it totally is there. But why'd you write this book? What was going on?
Well, it's interesting. My first book, Taking Point, is about leadership and culture and organizational transformation, basically leading an organization through change. And in much of our leadership development courses, of course, you can't, and this applies to business, to the military, to athletics. You can't change a team, you can't change yourself, you can't change your body without first transforming your mind and your behavior and your way of thinking and emotionally connecting to a new narrative. And so in thinking about all my different experiences from being in the world of finance for a year, and then joining one of my college fraternity brothers on his journey to becoming a SEAL, and then by the grace of God, making it through the training, and then of course not knowing at that point that 9/11 was lurking right around the corner, and we went from peacetime SEALs immediately to wartime SEALs, right into back-to-back combat deployments. And it's really fascinating to me in extracting how you, as you said earlier, how you intimately connect mind, body, spirit, even faith into accomplishing extraordinary feats, especially extraordinary feats that are both physical and mental. And when we look at, for example, the students who are more likely to make it through, for example, the BUDS training program, which has an extremely high attrition rate, as you know, and you begin with a large class of highly capable candidates who are accepted into the program, and still you only get about 15% of those who actually graduate. But what we've boiled it down to is not some of the attributes that you would think, because we've spent millions of dollars on research and understanding the physical, mental, and cognitive attributes of students more likely to successfully navigate the course. And it really comes down to grit, resilience, and mental fortitude, and a deep passion to serve. And as you know, as an elite athlete, you have to have the passion. You have to have the emotional connection to accomplish anything in life, whether it be in your career, in business, work, or athletic feats of greatness. So I really wanted to dive in and study that more. So the book obviously has backed up by some psychology and neuroscience, but it's really an understanding of how we can change the narrative, intentionally expand the boundaries of our comfort zone, reassess our values, align our values with our goals, plan better, execute better, debrief with ourselves better, and use all those elements together to live a more fulfilling, meaningful, and purpose-driven life.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, when you started the book, you stated that this is a book about resilience, a valuable weapon many of us across the globe have needed to arm ourselves with over the past year. Understatement. And you also, you know, what I love about that is, all right, so I'm also a physician and a scientist, and most of the work I had done at the National Institutes of Health in my laboratory was all about stress. I worked with stress hormone, and resilience is at the core of this. And what I see oftentimes is a society that's going soft. You know, like, are you really that resilient when, you know, the biggest challenge you have in the day is scoring the closest Starbucks, and that's it? What about other things in your life? Why are you running from challenges? What's that all about? And so, you know, you ask these questions right up front. What do I consider to be true adversity? How long will I wallow in my suffering? Is pain a thing to be avoided or embraced? Do I dwell on things out of my control? How quickly do I bounce back? How willing am I to embrace discomfort to achieve lofty goals? Whoa. Okay. So what you're asking people to do is reframe what this whole issue of adversity is all about, and to really get into a new way of looking at resilience, which is quit running away from everything and instead walk through it. Is that kind of where you're going?
Well, it is too. And as you recall, probably I mentioned sort of an interesting difference between culture and culture. So the Eastern cultures tend to embrace pain and suffering as a critical, not just a part of, but a critical element to the meandering path towards enlightenment. Whereas in the West, we tend to avoid pain and suffering at all costs. We avoid it. We don't talk about it. We medicate it. We do anything we possibly can to not allow, you know, stress, anxiety, pain, suffering, both physical and mental, into our lives. And oftentimes, and I'm sure you've seen this in your research and studies and experiences, the avoidance of it can compound it and cause greater levels of stress, anxiety, and suffering further down the road, whether it be 2 months down the road or 10 years down the road. We've seen this even in the studies of post-traumatic stress, whether you're talking about combat veterans or other folks who have experienced PTSD. Whereas when they avoid treatment or the stigma of that being weakness, and again, I'm not just talking about veterans, but when we've seen the avoidance avoidance of the anxiety and the other elements that come with PTSD, sometimes those really severe symptoms can crop up 10 years after the last traumatic event. Whereas people who are more proactive in getting help, getting therapy, and also doing other wellness-associated activities to retrain their brain towards acceptance and understanding the root causes of their suffering, you tend to see them heal a lot faster. So I do talk about the importance of each chapter, as you recall, has several mental models in them. So one thing I started doing when I started thinking about getting into the, I don't like this term, but the book technically falls into sort of that self-help category. And I looked at a lot of the books out there, and a lot of it's frankly just a bunch of fluff and nonsense and happy talk. I do like certain books. Like I kind of like Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's a really counterintuitive approach. It's creatively written, but at the same time, I've seen a lot of books, and they don't really tell you what to do. I'm kind of more of an action-oriented person. So just like I did my first book, I want to give a model that someone can actually follow. Here's how you plan better. Here's how you execute towards those goals better. Here's how you do a root cause analysis to understand where your shortcomings are. Why aren't you achieving these goals? Or why are you feeling the way you're feeling? And using all these elements proactively to expand your comfort zone. And the more we expand our comfort zone, the wider that area becomes. And the things that seemed insurmountable can become part of your everyday life. And then you move the goalposts and you do it again.
I love it. I love it. So when you were talking about the Eastern philosophy, you included one of my favorite Buddhist proverbs: pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. You know, again, it goes back to the perspective. So another compelling chapter you wrote was, you got dealt a bad hand, get over it. It's interesting. You wrote another Asian philosopher, Sun Tzu: in the midst of chaos, there is also opportunity. So if you were talking to someone right now, you know, an executive who's trying to pivot around the COVID, you know, craziness going on out there as he's running, or he or she is running, you know, their company or back and forth. So you're looking at him saying, you got dealt a bad hand, get over it. So what would you actually recommend they do? Just throw out a couple quick little tips, like, okay, I'm running a company and, oh my God, it's a restaurant. And now maybe it's a restaurant chain, maybe it's a national chain. But good Lord, of all industries out there hit by COVID, that's a tough one. So what would you say? What would you say?
It's really about perspective and changing that narrative, kind of like we referenced earlier, as to, you know, what is the challenge, what lays before you, and most importantly, we kind of have a saying in the SEAL community. I stole this from one of my SEAL Team 6 brothers, one of my closest friends, and you know, he says, stay in your 3-foot world. Essentially, that philosophy means focus on what is in your immediate control and sphere of influence so you can continue to design a desired outcome and deprioritize the things that are out of your control. Some people say, well, ignore what's not in your control, but I say deprioritize, because those elements that are out of your control are still external factors that might influence the outcome that you're trying to achieve. But all you can really do amidst adversity or chaos or, you know, this new virtual working environment, or for example, the restaurant industry, one of our clients at Taking Brand Leadership is a big restaurant chain in Texas. And they've done a phenomenal job, actually, of pivoting on their battlefield. So, for example, really, it's about creating a plan. So, for example, you know, when you're on the battlefield, on patrol, you get hit with an enemy ambush. We're trained, for example, in the SEAL teams to fight through that ambush. Rarely is it that we retreat or scatter. We find that it's more poignant to be aggressive, but with a plan, and to be well-trained and well-prepared to fight through that ambush. So really, it's about better planning, identifying new opportunities. So when we talk about planning, and I write about this in the book, everything we do needs a plan. You know, whether things are going well or things are not going so well, like most of us here in 2020, just like my company too, we had to go for government loans. We've had to recapitalize the business. We've had to create new revenue streams. We've had to go through a massive amount of digital transformation. And like I talk about in my first book, these are transformative events that would take companies years to go through successfully, and most fail at it. Whereas the companies that are fighting through this have done it in months. sometimes weeks.
Went
full digital, you know, within a few days, because they wouldn't survive if they didn't. And now they're thriving in a digital world. And as you know, many organizations out there are going to stay digital. They're rethinking their workspace needs. They're rethinking the workforce in general. And most of these businesses are going to come out of this with more profitable, more efficient, with a wider array of employee and talent opportunities. Because essentially, if you're working remote, you can tap into talent pools all over the world. And going back to your reference in the restaurant business, what they've done really well with our client in Texas, I'm not taking credit for this. I'll take some credit for it, but is, you know, they
go right ahead.
They've done a phenomenal job of looking at where their revenue streams come from, looking at where their inefficiencies are, looking where the plans that they've had on the side burner for new innovative technology. Well, you know what? Let's do that now. And they're going to make more money this year in 2020 and a higher level of EBITDA and profitability than they did last year. And we're seeing that. And other businesses that are fearful of change, or individuals that are fearful of change, are going to come out of this in a worse position. And we saw that in the 2008 and beyond recession. Companies that really attacked the recession head on and got ahead of it as fast as they possibly could, as opposed to the wait and see model. This probably won't last that long. It's not going to be as bad as we think. And it was worse than everybody thought. But the companies that went head on, they were all in. A lot of them gained a lot of market share and came out stronger than before. And that's kind of the premise of the book, too, is when we lean into adversity, lean into pain and suffering, one, and change your perspective, oftentimes the challenges that we face, again, going back to perspective, aren't as bad as we think. the outcome is not going to be as bad as you initially framed it in your mind. And then you have a framework and a mindset for when you face your next challenge. Oh, here's how I dealt with it, just like why we do after-action reviews in the military. We call it debriefs in the business world. When I talk about how to do a personal after-action review on a constant basis, let's say you're moving towards an aggressive goal. I talk a lot about fitness because it's a really easy way to visualize challenging goals.
Right.
You know, your first marathon. Well, you know, have a plan, you know, have an accountability partner, and execute towards that goal with a visualized win in mind and work backwards from there. And then you can, of course, list the obstacles, list the threats that are going to stand in your way, or your legacy behaviors that have held you back from achieving those goals, like procrastination or being distracted by other opportunities. And I put opportunities in big air quotes right there. And be able to limit your choices. When we limit our choices and I leave our choices that are only aligned with our values and aligned with our goals and what we're trying to achieve, then we're not so distracted by the shiny objects all the time.
I love it. I love it. You know, you brought, you know, when you said the word marathon, you brought back a pretty amazing memory for me. And that was, I decided to take with me a number of my patients, many of whom, most of whom had never run a marathon before, to the New York Marathon. So we trained, and you'll just never guess which marathon that was. It was 9/11.
Oh, man.
And it was 6 weeks after 9/11, when all hell was breaking out, as one can imagine. You know, the Pentagon was hit, the tower was hit in New York, and it was just, it was a storm, right? And at the same time, you know, we had all of the other craziness going on around it, and with the anthrax being, you know, thrown around in envelopes and sent to people and back and forth. It was just crazy. And I remember saying to myself, my God, you know, I'm leading these people into a marathon. We're going from Washington, D.C., where all hell broke out, into basically from the fry pan into the fire, right up to New York City. And, you know, it was really interesting. It was one of my Holocaust survivors, because we have quite a few of them here in the Washington, D.C. area. She was a child at the time, and now she's a much older woman. And she looked at me, and at one point, and she said, "Dr. Peek, right? You gonna let them control this whole narrative? You know, are you indeed afraid of going on up there and maybe putting your own people in harm's way? But you need to have a conversation with all of them." Said, "You know, who's controlling this on the overall and where are all your energies going? And do you have faith in Giuliani and our wonderful military for being able to protect everyone? I mean, we had 30,000 runners show up. So I sat down and I had a little come to heaven session with myself. And I said, to hell with it. I'm doing it, man. Let's just not even doubt it for a moment. We continued to train, went up there. I will tell you, honey, listen, going over those bridges with the Navy SEALs down below and all you guys and the big guns and everything, really protecting us across the Verrazano and all the rest. I've never run across bridges that fast, honey. It was like, let me get the hell off this thing because I have no idea what's going on. And oh, my goodness. Goodness gracious. But it was interesting. We ran into the fire. We did it. We said to hell with it. We're not going to be controlled, by fear. And we didn't allow that to happen. And we had probably one of the most unbelievable and memorable days of our entire life journey. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I can only imagine that someone like yourself had to do it on a daily basis, on a momentary basis, with everything that you did. And it's interesting. So that brings me to this other chapter. Every one of these chapters is just like totally rich. If you ain't failing, you ain't trying. And you quoted Napoleon Hill, who was obviously a great entrepreneur and real smart business guy from a million years ago. And he said, every adversity, every failure, every heartache carries with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. I say amen to that one.
Yep.
So here we have a culture that's afraid of failing. You don't want to show up because you may fall on your ass. Okay, talk him out of it. Come on, Brent. Let's do it.
Well, it kind of goes back to, my journey a little bit into making that decision to leave a relatively lucrative job in finance, a nice apartment downtown Dallas, and friends and family is there, and embark on this journey with a very uncertain outcome. Obviously, I'm a bit of a data guy, so knowing that there's about a 85% to 90% attrition rate in SEAL training, you have quite a risk there involved. Now, that risk, and I talk about this in the book, can be calculated. And using calculated risk and collecting the right data and information, and then using that information to prepare and plan appropriately, then you have the battle gear and the equipment and the weapons to step onto that battlefield of fear and tackle it head on. And this kind of goes back to that the fear of failing really also is captured in the rest of the book, where the last chapter is about, we're all going to die, so get off your ass and execute now. And it's about thinking with...
Oh, no, that was the next one we were going to.
We'll
come on now.
Too,
is that a chapter... It's crazy. I love that chapter title. We're all going to die, so get off your ass and execute.
Well, if you think about it this way...
I love it.
And this goes back to my mindset when I decided to say, screw it. I don't want to be that guy who's on the bar stool one day saying, I thought about being a CEO, I thought about being an entrepreneur, and I didn't do it because of this or because of that. Screw that. you have the capacity. Everyone has the capacity to manage your list of regrets that you're going to have the day you're on your deathbed, the day you're going over the Great Divide. What do you want to carry with you? What do you want to be proud of? Just like the moments you just mentioned. What if you hadn't done it? What if you had decided, maybe they're right, or maybe we shouldn't do this. There's too many risks involved. You would have been saying what if for the rest of your life. Maybe not, maybe that what if would fade over time. But you would have still said what if. Just like I would have. I said, I'm making good money. All these guys fail out of training. It's unlikely that would be the outcome. But I quickly transitioned my mindset to be like, no, don't fear failure. Because if you do fear failure, you're more likely to fail. and that goes into the guys who make it through SEAL training, is they can't compartmentalize in an appropriate, healthy manner. They can't be emotionally connected to the vision and outcome of what they're trying to accomplish. And they're so afraid of failing that they let it consume them, and they listen to those voices in their head that say, this isn't for you. And literally in Hell Week, you have actual voices in your ear saying, hey, Brent, this isn't for you. You're the worst student who ever came here. You're never going to make it. You're going to be a terrible CEO, even if you did make it. The instructors are trying to get you to quit. because if your mind is so wrapped around the fear of possibly failing, and just an instructor whispering in your ear while you're jogging down the beach is enough to get you to quit, well, we don't want you in our community anyway. you don't belong. And so when we think about managing those regrets and managing those fears, whether it be in our personal life or professional life, it's all intimately connected. There's no work-life balance. It's just work-life integration. It's important to understand, you know, what am I truly afraid of? And, you know, what am I willing to do to pursue that goal that's wrapped in risk and fear? And what am I totally unwilling to accept in order to attempt that? And what am I also willing and unwilling to accept later on in life when I will be thinking back and reflecting on what I've accomplished and most importantly, what I have not accomplished? What do I not want to regret? And that's really what that chapter is kind of encapsulated in, is that fear of failure. I mean, I went from field training, which has a huge attrition rate, to a combat field, going on combat deployments, which obviously, you know, we've lost a lot of guys over the past 20 years, to then jumping into the world of entrepreneurship, which has an equal or greater failure rate than field training. It's just a list of really poor decisions.
Oh, yeah.
It's a list of very poor decisions that ended up working out well. But at the end of the day, it's because I went all in. And you see that out there, people like you, other, you know, I'm not putting myself in this category, but what you would consider to be high performers, whether it be in an organization or on a sports team or just as individual contributors, there's specific attributes to people who would consider to be high performers. And it really goes back to some of those attributes around resilience, which is, you know, obviously they're positive thinkers, that's a given. They're emotionally connected to their purpose, and they kind of know what that purpose is, and therefore they're willing to accept failure, not total failure, but what I call micro failures along the way. You know, we tend to think about, you know, these people on social media, oh my God, they have 3 million followers, what are they doing right, what am I doing wrong, or this person seems they're making so much money, they're crushing it as an entrepreneur, or they've got all these degrees, and I don't have those degrees, we compare ourselves to them, but we don't really usually think about how many roadblocks that they busted through, how many failures they had along the way, how much pain and suffering they were willing to accept to achieve those lofty goals. We don't think about those things. We just get immediately jealous about what they've accomplished and think about our shortcomings. When you really so much suffering someone is willing to go through to accomplish what they have, then you can be like, maybe I could possibly transform my mindset, maybe not overnight, but through little micro movements and micro decisions and micro accountabilities to gradually build my mental fortitude and resilience to accept the suffering that I'm willing to engage in what I call purposeful suffering so that I can achieve more of the goals that I set.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And, you know, that whole thing about if you ain't failing, you ain't trying. It's, you know, people run away from, they live by fear. You can't live by fear. You can't sit around and do the, oh my God, what if? What if I fall on my ass? Well, if you do, you dust it off and you stand up and just move it along. And that's what you have to do. I don't hear enough of that out there. I think you hear it in the gym with some, you know, fitness trainer barking it at you or something like that, you know, like, you know, grow a set. Come on, you could do that, you know, that type of thing. But what you don't do is you don't hear it in real life. And instead, it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm just biased, but it just sounds too soft to me. I think this is why a lot of really interesting ways to reach out to people and grab them in this kind of respect were born of all of these interesting competitions like Tough Mudder and others where, you know, people had to go through obstacle courses like the, you know, they do in military training and all the rest of it. You never have an opportunity to do that anymore. You don't really have a, you know, like a common person out there, you know, is just not getting that kind of challenge anymore. And we need to kind of, I believe, instill that. If doing some kind of, you know, physical activity like Tough Mudder or something like that is a gateway into really beginning to apply this, you know, to your own life, then I think that that's totally cool. But other than that, I reading your book, I hope to God, you know, people are going to get it. You think women are going to like to read your book? Tell me why, yes or no.
No, absolutely. And I've always, as a consultant, as a speaker, even in the first book, even based on my background or that things might be wrapped in some military philosophy, it's really about the insights, the key takeaways, the models, the best practices and philosophies in the book that are relevant to anyone. You know, one of my clients, she's a the vice president at a $2 billion software company, and she's obsessed with David Goggins. You know, watches all of his videos and follows him on Instagram. She's so excited about the book because David Goggins wrote the story. And sadly, I think some people might be more excited about the book because of David's involvement than mine. But, you know what? I'll take it. That's fine. It is interesting because I really learned about next level mental fortitude from him. We were in the same boat crew together in Hell Week, and that was a wild ride of an experience, as you can imagine. And I just remember moments where our boat crew would, you know, we'd win a race, and we'd be, you know, resting for 5 seconds, and he'd just be like, I mean, he'd just have, like, snot running down his nose and covered in sand, just, like, screaming at everybody, like, let's go, Montana, using his typical vernacular, which is very colorful. And I was like, I don't know if I love this guy, if I'm kind of scared of him, but it's kind of both. I'm kind of excited about it.
I love it.
And it's always fascinating because then he goes, he never, it's that mindset. I mean, he takes mental fortitude to kind of maybe even an unhealthy level, but.
I know, really.
Am I though? But it's that mindset of never being satisfied with the status quo. And that's really what it comes down to. What high performers are never satisfied. It's always a journey. There's never an end. And that's really what high achievement is about, is setting a goal, achieving or exceeding that goal, then finding an even loftier goal and pursuing that goal. Regardless of what your passions are, that being your personal career, your personal life, or your professional career, people, teams, and organizations that are never satisfied with the status quo, and they always have that sort of uncomfortable feeling that, you know, they could fail any minute, it keeps them on their toes. And that's also a bedrock of resilient teams and resilient people, is they're always looking for threats and obstacles that are lurking around the corner. They're proactive about it. They don't wait for it to happen. They plan accordingly. Just like you would plan a mission, you'd have, okay, what are our threats? What are our potential blockages? What are our contingencies when those threats and blockages inevitably happen? And that's how we have to think about life in general.
Well, okay, so as we're winding this up, I just want to make sure everyone out there, you know, kind of gets cool now with the Navy SEAL speak, okay? So I'm like Navy SEAL splaining to you some of these wonderful terms of endearment from Brent. So here we go. Fail-safe principles to transform your mind and live an extraordinary life. So I'm just going to give you a little teaser here. So obviously, embrace the suck. What does that mean? Accept life's challenges for what they are, opportunities for growth and development. Make the choice to lean in, not run away. Did you hear me, ladies? Not run away. Okay, so think about it in a very different way. If something funky's going on, there's a lesson in there somewhere, or as we say, there's a pony in that big pile of stuff somewhere. You know, just keep digging in there somewhere. And then really persevere and thrive on adversity. When you face it, just walk right up and give it a big old bear hug, crushing its bones. Make it your friend. Recertify yourself as a savage every chance you get. Woo! All right. So that's just a little teaser. We have been talking to, oh my goodness, Brent Gleason. Brent is a Navy SEAL combat veteran. Right off the bat, Brent, thank you for your service to our country. He is a veteran of SEAL Team 5, and he's taking so many of the lessons he learned and applying them to everyday life, both in business as an entrepreneur, but also, come on, for you and me. Ladies, it's time to embrace the suck. It is. I'm just saying. This is a fabulous book. I loved it. I just, you know, I took it in chunks, sort of like, you know, eating a carrot cake, a little piece here, a little piece there, thoroughly enjoying, loved it, loved it, loved it. So everyone out there, Brent Gleason is the author of the new book, Embrace the Suck. And the subtitle on this is The Navy SEAL Way to an Extraordinary Life. Brent, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was real fun. I feel like you and I could talk about this stuff for hours, if not days, so maybe we'll do it again someday.
Oh, no. Trust me, honey. That's not even a promise. That's a threat. And everyone all out right there right now, while Brent's sitting there, come on now. Hit iTunes, rate and review the show, because, honey, I want to hear from you. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD or Instagram at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.